We're going to get into the lesson tonight in Exodus chapter 31 on the subject, what on earth is God's will? We've been looking at this now for, this is the fifth week on the subject of God's will. This is the last one for us. And in this lesson tonight, I'm going to have the opportunity to talk about one of my favorite Bible characters. He never preached the message. If somebody could help Dorothy, we need an usher. We don't have any ushers anywhere right now, but we need somebody sitting at these doors to help people. Dorothy, I'm sorry you had to get through that yourself. All right, we'll work on that as well. He didn't preach a message. He didn't win a soul, as far as we know. Never taught a lesson, a Sunday school lesson, if you will. But just one of my favorite Bible characters, and we'll get into him in just a few minutes. We've been talking about this matter of God's will. God has a will for every individual. We've said before that will divides into two categories, general and specific. And by way of review, the specific will of God comes into play when we talk about our livelihood. Now, number one on your handout, again, the specific will of God is just that. It is the chosen vocation for every one of God's people. The specific will of God is the chosen vocation for every one of God's people. And I believe with all of my heart that God has a vocation for every person to fulfill, okay, in life. Every one of us. It is what God has for us to do in our livelihood, as far as our livelihood goes, okay? Number two, the dictionary defines livelihood as a means of supporting one's existence, especially financially or vocationally. So a livelihood is your means of supporting your life, your existence, okay, financially. Now, we talked about last week the specific will of God for some is that God calls some men into ministry for a livelihood. I like what Brother Mike Hall's dad, said many years ago. Every Christian is not called to full-time service, but every Christian is called to full-time Christianity. And that's the truth. But there are some people, some men, that God calls into ministry for a livelihood. Preaching, I said last week, is not necessarily the result of a call into ministry for a livelihood. Because the truth is, many men are enabled by God to preach. That can be accomplished in any number of places. It could be a church service. It could be in a nursing or a retirement home. It could be on a bus. It could be in a teen meeting. It could sometimes be in a Sunday school class where they preach more than they teach. If you caught the Sunday school classes during the shutdown, we had Brother Irvin teach the lesson one Sunday morning. And I'm telling you what, man, it was 30 minutes of intensity. And I loved it. It was outstanding. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Brother Irvin has been called into ministry for a livelihood or any other man that preaches. The call to ministry for a livelihood involves an office like pastor, like evangelist, like missionary. And truthfully, you know, those offices kind of bleed over into each other to some degree. For instance, Paul told Timothy as a pastor to do the work of an evangelist. And Paul was a combination himself of missionary slash evangelist. But you kind of get the idea here that the call into ministry involves more than just preaching. All right. Now, not all men are called into ministry and not all women are called to marry into ministry for livelihood. For livelihood. Okay. So does that mean if they're not called into ministry for livelihood that they are left out of the blessing of serving in the will of God? And the answer to that question is absolutely not. They're not left out of the blessing of being right in the middle of God's specific will for their life. And I love the character we're going to talk about for a few minutes this evening. His name is found in Exodus chapter 31. Look with me, if you will, at verse number 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, see, I have called by name Bezalel. There's the guy right there. Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. Now, the Bible says, number 3 on your sheet, the Lord called Bezalel by name to head up the building of the tabernacle. Now, I like what he says there. I have called by name Bezalel. It's like God is saying, I have created this man for this vocation. I didn't just reach down randomly and select Bezalel from a group. I called him by name. I have fitted him for this purpose. And we'll get into that just a little bit later. Now, Bezalel, he had been down in Egypt and he had departed with the children of Israel when God delivered them. In Egypt, Bezalel would have worked with the children of other men, the children of Israel, other men, gathering straw and making brick. So like the others, he probably became pretty proficient in brick making. Because that's about all they did. They gathered straw and they made brick. But there were no bricks in the building of the tabernacle. There was a lot of cloth. There was a lot of wood and woodworking. There was a lot of working with precious metals, a lot of silver and a lot of gold, so forth. So all of this was involved in this tabernacle. Now, God said, I have called this man by name. Look at verse 3. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding and in knowledge and in all manner of workmanship. So God had filled Bezalel with his Spirit, not to serve in ministry for his livelihood, but to use specific talents and abilities to physically build the tabernacle. Now understand, God called him by name. God filled him with his Spirit. We never read anywhere where Bezalel taught a lesson. We never read anywhere where Bezalel preached a message, all right? But God had called him by name, and God had filled him with his Spirit. Does that sound like something similar God might do to a pastor? Does that sound something similar to what God might do to an evangelist or a missionary? And this is the joy, folks, of the specific will of God. You don't have to be in full-time ministry for a livelihood to be in the specific will of God. Here is this man, Bezalel. God's going to use him. Now, as God filled him with the Spirit, Bezalel had wisdom, he had understanding, he had knowledge in all areas necessary for the tabernacle to be built. Truth of the matter is, when you look at Bezalel, you really can say that God filled him with the Spirit for the task of being a general contractor. That's exactly what Bezalel was. He was going to oversee the construction of the tabernacle. He was not just knowledgeable in one trade. He was knowledgeable in all of them. That's what the general contractor is. He brings guys in to do the plumbing, brings guys in to do the electric, brings guys in to do the HVAC. Here come the framers. Here come the drywallers. Here come the painters. Here come the roofers. Here come the people that do the flooring. And the general contractor is usually somewhat knowledgeable in all of those areas, but not as specific as those subcontractors. So that's exactly what Bezalel became for the tabernacle. God called him by name. God filled him with his Spirit for the purpose of overseeing the construction of the tabernacle. Look at verse number 4. Look at what it says about him. To devise cunning works, to work in gold and in silver. So it's not just wood. It's not just cloth. To work in gold and in silver and in brass, and in cutting of stones to set them, and in carving of timber to work in all manner of workmanship. So again, this involved more than making brick. It involved some skills in thinking, in planning, devising means to construct this facility. Now, I like that word in verse number 4, cunning. Cunning means that Bezalel, number 5 on your sheet, the word cunning means that Bezalel was involved in the making of some kinds of machines or tools that would require great thought. So this man is more than just, more than just knows how to do the trade, if you will. He's got some advanced knowledge, some advanced wisdom, some advanced understanding that give him insight into creating tools and machines that help get the job done. I marvel at the cunning that some men have when it comes to creating tools and machines that allow others to get the job done in an easier and faster manner. I've learned that one of the ways to get a job done easier and more proficiently is to have the proper tools. Have you ever tried to do something with a tool that the tool was not designed to do? I know you have. All of us have. And when you do that long enough, you get frustrated and aggravated. Somebody comes along and gives you a tool made for that job, and the whole thing becomes easier. You remember the term weapons of mass destruction that was made, popular during the Bush administration? Wasn't that back during Desert Storm and all? Weapons of mass destruction. I own a weapon of mass destruction. It is called a Sawzall. A Sawzall. Now, I think there's a more professional name for it. Reciprocating saw. Is that what it is? But it's a whole lot. Just to me, it sounds more fun to call it a Sawzall. Now, my wife has a weapon of mass destruction. It's called a hair curler, a curling iron. That thing is, that's a serious weapon. But whoever came up with the Sawzall, I hope he's saved. I hope I can shake his hand someday in heaven and say, God bless you, man. That is a wonderful, wonderful tool. It tears up more than you want to tear up sometimes. And as Abby and Alan well know, I went down to help Alan during his fixer-upper and ended up cutting two of his water pipes. But they were frozen, so I didn't know it. But he found out later. I'm telling you, weapons of mass destruction. That's what it is. But, so Bezalel was the guy filled with the Spirit of God, filled with wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, who could think up the concepts of the Sawzalls and all the other tools to help make the project possible. Folks, just because these people lived thousands of years ago, don't think that they were dummies. You ever looked at those pyramids in the land of Egypt? How they built those things? Incredible. So there's not a bunch of dummies here. In fact, they might have been more smart. They might have had higher IQs than we have today. I don't know. But, I mean, he got the job done. Okay? Now look at verse number 6. And I, behold, I have given with him Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan. And in the hearts of all that are wise-hearted, I have put wisdom. By the way, you keep reading and you keep noticing these phrases here. Who's been putting wisdom? Who's been putting understanding? Who's been putting knowledge in the hearts and minds of these men? God has. God has, okay? So here it is. Now, God gave Bezalel, this helper named Aholiab, to work with him. But number 6 on your sheet, these men were not just given wisdom, understanding, and knowledge to do the work. They were given the ability to teach others how to do the work as well. So they know how to do the work, and they know how to show somebody else to do it, okay? Which is, it's just a great, I remember many, many years ago, a man here, I was here, come to this church, and I forget what we were doing, but a man in the church then showed me a little trick about removing finish nails from trim. Because usually, a lot of times, trim is made out of oak, maybe some nicer type wood, and if you try to pound those nails from the back through the front and pull it out, you mess up the surface of the trim. And he turned the wood over on its face, and you got the nail sticking up, and he said, you take a pair of channel locks, and you put the curved in, and you grip that nail, and you roll that thing on the curved side of that channel lock, and it pulls that finished nail right through that trim piece and never messes up the finished side. It's just... And I used that yesterday. Believe me, my hand tells me I used that yesterday. Pulling those all yesterday morning, man, taking nails out of trim. And all it took was 60 seconds of some man that had some knowledge and just a little bit of skill, just a little bit of wisdom to show me how to do something, make my job much, much easier. And I've had the privilege of showing that to a few people over the years myself. I didn't think of it. Somebody else showed it to me. Well, this is Aholiab. This is Bezalel. God has given them wisdom. God has given them understanding. God has given them knowledge, not only for their own good, but how to teach others as well. Now turn in your Bible to chapter 35. Exodus chapter 35, okay? Exodus 35, look with me down at verse number 30. And I'm going to get to just a couple of lessons at the very end, so just stay with me through this. But we're just learning here about this man Bezalel and how God used him. Exodus chapter 35, verse number 30. And Moses said unto the children of Israel, see, the Lord hath called by name. Here it comes again, Bezalel. Okay, God called him by name, specifically for this task. Verse 31, and he had filled him with the Spirit of God. Here we are again, God's filled him with the Spirit, wisdom, so forth. Look down at verse 34. And he hath put in his heart that he may teach both he and Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach, the tribe of Dan. Dan, them hath he filled with wisdom of heart to work all manner of work of the engraver, of the cunning workman, of the embroiderer in blue, purple, scarlet, fine linen, of the weaver, even of them that do any work and of those that devise cunning work. So again, these men were given special abilities by God, both to do work themselves and to teach others how to work. And the Bible even tells us which man was given ability in what areas. Look at chapter 37 and verse 1. 37 and verse 1. And Bezalel made the ark of shittim wood. 2 cubits and a half was the length of it. And he goes on through it in verse number 6. And he made the mercy seat of pure gold. And in verse number 10, he made the table of shittim wood. So here is Bezalel. He's working with the wood. He's working with the precious metals. Later on, you read where he puts the curtains together. So that's kind of what Bezalel did. Look down at chapter 38. Chapter 38. And look with me at verse number 23. Here's these two guys working together. Bezalel and Aholiab. Verse 23. And with him was Aholiab, son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan, an engraver, and a cunning workman, and an embroiderer in blue and in purple and scarlet. Fine linen. He's engraving all the wood that Bezalel is cutting and putting on these pieces of furniture. He's embroidering. He's dyeing the cloth. He's dyeing the linen that made up the curtains, okay, that served as the wall for the tabernacle and the coverings that served as the roof. So here's these two men. God called them by name. God filled them with His Spirit so they could do their work, so they could teach others also. Now, folks, these are builders. But to me, it sounds like the same thing you'd say about a pastor, about an evangelist, about a missionary. God calls a man, puts him in the ministry of light. That's his livelihood. He fills him with His Spirit. He helps him do the work. He helps him teach and preach, and he helps him train others to do the same. It sounds the very same to me. That's the point I'm getting at. There's no difference in you men who are out there doing what you do in the specific will of God for your life and what I'm doing for the specific will of God for my life. There's no second-class citizenship when it comes to the will of God. You see that? Okay, now, let's go over to 1 Timothy. So you got that right there. Now, let's tie some things together. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 5, okay? 1 Timothy chapter 5. And I appreciate what the Bible says about the office of pastor and evangelist and teachers and those that communicate the word, respect those offices. And I think there's some degree of that that should be shown by people. But, you know, you're not chopped liver. You're not chopped liver because you're working a job. My gracious, you're God called and God given wisdom and understanding and knowledge. And I'll get to more of that in detail in just a few minutes, and I'm watching my time. Now look at 1 Timothy 5, verse number 8. I won't be long on this, but just look at the verse, okay? But verse number 8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Now this is the passage where Paul is giving instruction to Timothy concerning the care of widows. Which widows the church had a responsibility to care for? The church does not have a responsibility to care for all widows. There are specific cases where the church should step in and care for a widow. When Paul says here in verse number 8, if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. I think he's talking to husbands about providing for their wife to be a widow someday, potentially. That more often happens than the wife dies and leaves the widower. Once in a while that happens. But it's talking about providing for your own. Providing for your own. And those of his own house. Now, all through the Bible, and I'm going to tie this together, we read of men providing for their own. It might be through farming. It might be through farming with grain. Might be farming with livestock. It might be farming with vineyards and orchards. It might be through fishing, commercial fishing. It might be through professional hunting. But the bottom line is that man is to work in order to supply the needs of his own. That's the bottom line. I was going to turn you to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. We won't go there for sake of time, and talk about the necessity of working for what we eat. Paul said, if any man would not work, neither should he eat. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. We're in a mess in our country because we've got an underbelly of entitlement-minded people who have been handed a living that has been touted as the result of compassion. The compassionate party. It is not the result of compassion. It is done with the intention to buy their loyalty, to buy their vote. But since I'm not going to go to 2 Thessalonians 3, I'm not going to say all that tonight, okay? So, here we are. I gave you the example of you got a man, two men, called by name, by God. God filled them with His Spirit, gave them wisdom, understanding, and knowledge to work, to teach others how to work for the purpose of building the tabernacle, okay? All through the Bible, we know that men are supposed to work to provide for their own. Now, putting all of this together, okay, let me say the last three things here. Did I give you number seven? The bottom line, yes, is that man is to work in order to supply the needs of his own. That's number seven. Here's number eight on your sheet. God expects man to provide for his own needs and those of his household. Okay? And I've already talked about that. And by the way, people, that expectation is as old as the Garden of Eden. What did God tell Adam to do? Here's the garden, dress it, keep it, and oh, you and your family can eat of the fruit of the trees. Okay? So you dress it and keep it, and you can have, you can take care of yourself. All right? Now, let's go on number two. Number nine is number two on my sheet. So God expects man to provide his own needs and those of his household. Number nine. God gifts people with talents and abilities that will enable them to work and provide for their needs. God gifts people with talents and abilities that will enable them to work and provide for their needs. Look, just as God gifted Bezalel, and just as God gifted Aholiab with certain talents, physically and mentally, God does the same today. Number 10 on your sheet, the work you are doing is the result of the talents and abilities God has given you. And I'm not saying that you haven't studied, and I'm not saying that you haven't trained, I'm not saying that you haven't learned to succeed in your field of work. What I am saying is that your field of work is the result of the talents and abilities that God gave you. And you've got a natural inclination to do what you are doing. That is your propensity. Propensity means you're naturally inclined. If we could have some of the men tonight stand up and talk about what they do for a living. That's all they did, was talk about what they do for a living. In our, maybe you know them well, maybe you don't know them well, but if you knew them halfway well, you could see where that man's personality, that man's approach to life, that everything about that man is suited for what he's doing to make a living. That didn't happen by accident. That was God's plan. As much as it was God's plan for Terry Angel to be a pastor after being an assistant pastor and being in the ministry, and hopefully has gifted Terry Angel and talented Terry Angel with a propensity for ministry for livelihood, He's done the same for you. He's done the exact same for you. And sometimes, you know, you ever hear somebody talk about what they do and it's Greek to you? You know, I hear some of these men talk about what they do. I talk to my brother, Tim. That's where my mother's down in South Carolina, and Luke and Jess and the boys are down at Tim's place. I used to talk to Tim. You know, he did the Simply Orange, the orange juice. I would talk to Tim, y'all getting a good close-up. That thing's red, Brother Scott, just so you know. So I guess it's offline. So, or does that mean good? That means online. Okay, red means go. I always thought red meant stop. But anyway, okay, all right. So I talked to Tim about it. Tim, what do you do to develop an orange juice? I might as well take a nap. He starts talking. I'm lost. I can't wrap my mind. You've been there. Are you? It's like Greek. And I'm supposed to know a little Greek. I do. He runs a sandwich shop. No, I'm just teasing. That's terrible. but seriously, it's like the guy has. But when I look at Tim's personality and his talents and abilities, He is absolutely created for what He's doing. But that tells me He's in the specific will of God for His life. And I'm not saying that it was handed to Him. Man, He had 8.5 by 11 inch spiral notebooks full of one problem from chemistry. Showed me that one year at Christmas when we were back in Atlanta. A whole notebook of equations that was one problem. One. And so I'm not taking anything away from his determination and His character to study. But that was His natural inclination that came. My dad didn't do that. It's not what my dad did. I'm not doing that. Tom, if you could have known Tom was a gifted teacher. And if you knew his personality and were around him, you'd see that in a heartbeat. He would greet 300 kids on opening day of school in the fall by name. By name. Hello. By name. All of them. It's just incredible. That came from God. And yes, God didn't just zap that in His mind. Okay, like a USB drive or, a jump drive or something. He had to study and work. But that was His natural inclination. Now, number 11 on your sheet tonight. Using those abilities to provide for your own through honest labor means you are fulfilling the specific will of God for your life. To provide for your own, using those abilities to provide for your own through honest labor means you are fulfilling the specific will of God for your life. So, you hear a preacher say, I know I'm in the will of God. You hear a missionary say, I know God's called me and I'm in the will of God going to Uganda. And I know God's called me to be an evangelist, like Andrew Reardon has told me a couple of times. I just know God's called me to do that. Great, wonderful. You know what? And the truth of the matter is, you men could give testimony that what you are doing to make an honest living, to provide for your own, that was basically your natural inclination. God's called you to what you're doing. You're in the will of God. As much as don't ever, ever, ever let the devil sell you short by telling you, it's too bad that you can't be in, the perfect will of God doing some ministry somewhere. You are in the perfect, specific will of God doing what God has not only called you to do, but gifted you and talented you to do. And yes, it took work, and yes, it took study, and it took preparation. But that was your propensity, your natural inclination. It came from God. You are living in the specific will of God. Number 12, remember Romans 12:2, the will of God. 12:1, the will of God. Good, acceptable, and perfect. Good, acceptable, and perfect. I don't know about you, but it ought to make you happy to know that doing whatever you're doing, if you're a decent Christian, you can fulfill both the general and specific will of God for your life. Be right smack dab in the middle of what is good and acceptable and perfect, the will of God. Father in heaven, thank You for the privilege to have this lesson tonight. Thank You for what Your book teaches us. Thank You for the privilege to live in the middle of Your will. I pray that You will help us, Lord, to be thankful for how You created us, to be grateful for talents and abilities that You've gifted us to have. And Lord, it takes work on our part and effort and determination. But in the end, it comes from You. And we can live in Your perfect will for our lives. We love You. We thank You for Your grace to us. In Jesus' name, amen.